Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the thrice weekly Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on May 15th of 2011 under the headline Crew of Shipwrecked Schooner Rescued by a Railroad Train. Here we go. At a little after 8 a.m. on January 13th, 1912, the four-masted schooner Admiral was on a broad reach through heavy seas, the usual southwest wind at her back and gusting with gale force. The ship was heading for her home port of Gray's Harbor. Captain Joseph Bender was having breakfast with his wife and their four-year-old son when he heard a terrified yell from the lookout. "Breakers ahead!" Bender, a seasoned mariner, was not one to linger over eggs and bacon when an alarm like that has been sounded. He leaped to his feet and sprinted for the forecastle. The ship was supposed to be 60 miles off the coast, but of course she wasn't. The southwest wind quarters toward the shore, and as sailors know well, it's really easy to fall off the wind when on a broad reach. The Admiral had apparently done so and was now headed straight for a jagged line of rocks reaching out from the mouth of the Columbia River, the almost completed South Jetty. The helm was already hard over, and ironically, if the lookout had spotted the breakers 100 feet earlier, the ship probably would have cleared the jetty by a whisker and been tacking for the open sea. But that's not what happened. There was a railroad trestle running along the top of the jetty for the railroad that was being used to build and maintain it. And this is what the Admiral fetched up on, striking, by an amazing piece of luck, the only spot in the line in which the rocky riprap had yet to be filled in around it. The 683-ton ship smashed into the standing bents, upright posts of the trestle, snapping them off, and then impaled itself on their stumps. The railroad ties, along with spikes and other hardware, flew everywhere. Luckily, nobody was hit. The steel rails hanging out in space tore the rigging away, and the whole time the heavy seas and 70-mile-an-hour winds were thrashing the big ship around. And then a massive wave picked the ship up off the posts and jammed it stern first into the gap in the jetty. Meanwhile, in a small construction shack not far away, the members of the jetty work crew were getting ready for another day. They had just decided that the weather was too heavy to work on the jetty when the telephone rang. It was Oscar Wickland from the Point Adams Life Station on the south side of the mouth of the Columbia. It seemed the Cape D Life Station, that's Cape Disappointment, on the Washington side, had picked up a wireless distress signal from a steamship sailing for the bar, reporting that a foremaster was in trouble on the jetty. Well, as luck would have it, an hour or so earlier, jetty foreman and future mayor of Astoria, J.C. Tenbrook, had asked an engineer named O'Neill to build up steam in engine number 4, a tiny 042 construction engine about the size of a small Class C motorhome, to do some work in the yard. 042, by the way, refers to the wheel configuration. 0 small leading wheels, 4 large drive wheels, and 2 small trailing wheels. By the time Wickland got there, it was ready to go, and a few minutes later, the little engine was out of the yard and on its way out onto the jetty with the four of them in the cabin. It was Davy Jones versus Casey Jones. The seas were huge. As they pounded the jetty below, they threw huge arcs of foam spray over the little engine, whose hot boiler turned them into clouds of steam, making it even harder to see. The tracks trembled with each impact, and Wickland and the crew, Tenbrook, O'Neill, and engineer Al Seifert, knew that a very large sailing ship had crashed into the line somewhere ahead, so they were moving slowly, hoping for the best, knowing it would be pretty easy to fall into the ocean and die. Then O'Neill gave a sudden shout and Seifert cut the power. There on the tracks in front of them was a man, kneeling on the railroad ties, clutching something large under his coat. It was First Mate Andy Anderson of the Admiral, shaking violently and hypothermic nearly to the point of no return, holding the captain's 4-year-old son under his coat. Anderson, unable to continue walking, may have been preparing to use the last of his fading body heat to keep the toddler alive in hopes that someone might find him. Instead, he found himself with the boy in the warm, crowded cabin of a tiny locomotive, which got more crowded when the crew pulled cautiously forward and rescued the other three shivering people huddled near the broken end of the tracks. That would be Captain Bender, his wife, and the ship's cook. But the others had clambered off the doomed ship on the opposite side of the gap in the line, and now they were stuck there, 200 feet away, unreachable. No problem. Wickland, the professional rescuer, had a plan. If the survivors on the other side of the broken jetty could just keep from freezing to death long enough for him to put it into effect. So Seaford put the little engine in reverse and puffed back along the tracks, more quickly now since he knew the tracks behind him were good, to the construction shack. Wickland's life station crew was waiting for them. Quickly, they unloaded the shipwrecked five, bundling them into the warm construction shack. Then they worked with furious haste to hook up two flat cars to the front of the engine. On the flat cars, the rescuers loaded a Lyle gun, short-barreled cannon made to shoot lifelines instead of cannonballs, and a breeches buoy, which was essentially a sling that hangs from a zip line. The Lyle gun easily reached the other side with its line. The breeches buoy was quickly prepared, and in short order, the remaining seven sailors got their turn to be crammed into the warm cab on their way to safety. Not one crew member died. Yet not one had a ghost of a chance of surviving this incident without the help of that most unlikely of rescuers, a railroad train. Oddly enough, this entire time, the railroad and rescue people had seen no trace of the Admiral. The seas had forced it through the gap in the jetty and badly damaged it, wallowed around in the mouth of the Columbia, drifting toward Peacock Spit. An attempt to salvage it almost ended in tragedy when, just after a salvage crew had boarded the hulk, it capsized, throwing all three of them into the sea. But eventually it fetched up on Peacock Spit, and the sea pummeled it into pieces like so many other vessels before and since. Key sources in this story have included works by Don Marshall, James A. Gibbs Jr., and Dick Wagner. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do. Visuals that go with today's show can be found at offbeatoregon.com, where you will also find full citations to the sources for this story. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Got an idea for a show I should do or just want to say hi? Drop me a line at fj@offbeatoregon.com. Or ping me on Twitter at @OffbeatOregon, or send a message through the Facebook page at facebook.com/oregon.1859. Also, do let me know if you're ever going to be in Corvallis with time for a cup of coffee or a pint of Hammerhead and an inclination to talk about Oregon history. Fresh episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come your way around 6 a.m. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning. So if you're looking forward to the next one, well, you haven't got long to wait. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.